Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
When you stay in a hotel, you know, you kind of get whatever room they give you within the confines of what you requested, a double bed, a king bed, queen bed, whatever it may be. You'll get a room, hopefully, that is, you know, what you asked for. The number of that room, usually not determined until you check in, because they're filling it up as they go. What happens when you get the room at the hotel that is infamously haunted? And haunted specifically because of an event that took place in a room that you just got the keys to. What do you do when you have the haunted room? That's what we find out in our next story. Take a listen. Back to our conversation in just a second. Have you ever done a Google search on yourself just to see what's out there? Your name, your email, all that? Try it. Yeah. It's a little uncomfortable to see what's all out there. It's what the data brokers love. They want to sell information like that. They're going to sell your information to scammers, spammers, and anyone else who may want to target you. Yeah, your full name, email, home address, health records, relatives. It's all out there. Believe me, it is. That's why I've been using Aura. They're the sponsors of today's podcast. Aura shows me which data brokers are selling my information and automatically submits opt-out requests for me. It's very nice. It's very convenient. And since I've started using it, it's been funny. I've been getting less spam. I've been getting less junk mail from things I've never even thought I'd have an interest in or really don't have an interest in. It's because Aura is cleaning up my information. It helps reduce the amount of spam I get and protects me from hackers who could also use that information to help them access my social media accounts, bank accounts, and other sensitive information. Aura also does so much to protect me and my family from online threats that I can't see. I get features like antivirus, VPN, password management, parental controls, identity theft insurance, and more without having to download several different apps. And there's one for this and one for it's all there with Aura. It's really easy to set up as well. The best part of it all is I get everything at one affordable price. You may have one or two of these tools already. I know I did. But when I got Aura, I'm like, I don't need them anymore. I got Aura. Not having Aura is like locking the front door and leaving the back door wide open. Aura is always on, doing the hard work and keeping me safe so I can focus on other tasks with peace of mind. I value my privacy and I value yours. Go to aura.com/ghost to start your 2-week free trial. Yeah. aura.com/ghost. That's aura.com/ghost. Ghost to start your free 2-week trial. Approximately 1 year prior to her murder, I had the opportunity to meet and speak with a woman, now deceased, for a few minutes. The news of her murder came as a shock to everyone. My story isn't really about her. One of my best friends, the maid of honor, booked a room at a hotel in Toronto, Ontario, for a bachelorette party for another friend of ours who was getting married that fall. This union was finalized in May of that year. In any case, I went to the bachelorette party with a group of anywhere from 10 to 12 other women. Anna, the maid of honor, Mary, a bride, Kelly, a friend I knew in high school, but hadn't seen in a while until I reconnected with her through Anna, and a fourth friend of Anna, and Mary. Another girl named Rita all spent the night together at the hotel. Rita has always been someone I've disliked, but I tolerated her because of the close relationship she shared with Anna and Mary. Anyway, Anna arranged for the bachelorette party and hired the hotel for the event, but that wasn't the hotel she had originally chosen. Rita insisted that Anna reserve this specific hotel, and more specifically, a room, even though Anna preferred another hotel. It was cheaper than the other hotel Anna was considering, so despite her misgivings, she made the reservation. Eventually learned why Rita had specifically requested this hotel and room for Anna. Since Anna's husband had already departed after leaving her and their son off at the hotel, they were unable to retrieve the three bottles of wine they had left behind. So, I went to the store to get wine Anna had requested, and I arrived at the hotel about 10 minutes before Mary did. Mary's now husband, Matt, had brought her there under cover of another pretext. When I arrived at the hotel, I called Anna to find out which room they were staying in, and then I went to the front desk and said I needed to be transported back to the room to meet my friends. Following their directions, I located the elevator and headed to the 19th floor. Prior to that, everything was running smoothly. Things were different by the time I reached the 19th floor, though. As I approached the floor, I was overcome with a sense that something terrible had occurred. I felt as though I may pass out from dizziness. I was also bleeding in some areas. It seemed eerily like I was seeing the death of another person. I finally made it to the room. One of her other friends opened the door. I was drenched in perspiration. My arms felt like they were about to fall off, and the two bottles of booze I was carrying didn't weigh much, but seemed like a ton each. I was exhausted. I was truly on the verge of passing out. My buddy Kelly opened the door for me, and after taking one look at me, she asked, "What the hell is wrong with you? Looked like I just finished running a marathon. I just taken a ride in the elevator." Kelly received the booze and I sat down on the nearest sofa with a water bottle provided by a different acquaintance. When I calmed down a little, I shared my story of the strange encounter I had while strolling down the corridor. Others, like Anna, Mary, Kelly, and Rita, don't seem as astonished as the others. After my encounter with Anna's son, Mary told Rita about my abilities. My abilities to sense the dead. While in this room, I began experiencing new feelings. Perhaps it was coming from the direction of the bedroom. All sorts of emotions flooded through me, including rage, terror, and the stench of a murder. Planned events included Matt bringing Mary to the hotel room under a phony pretext where they would drink until the male stripper, masquerading as a cop, arrived. We had a great time at the strip show and then headed to Bar Burrito, a Mexican restaurant, for dinner. We needed to let the booze wear off because hitting the clubs, so we set off on foot. Even though it was a hot and muggy summer day in downtown Toronto, taking a few steps outside helped me get my bearings after pacing the halls of the 19th floor and processing the emotions I was experiencing there. We laughed a lot and I almost completely forgot about how I'd been feeling. In order to seat everyone, the waitstaff at the restaurant pushed two tables together. Mary was at the head of the table, Anna on her right, and I was on the far left. All of my friends were seated in a circle around the table, with Rita sitting next to Anna and Kelly sitting next to me. After settling on some meal and drink options, we passed the time with idle chatter. At the time we waited for our desserts after dinner, Rita brought up the subject of ghosts and the supernatural. Each person shared their thoughts on whether or not they believed in ghosts. Then Rita turns to me and asks, "Do you believe in the paranormal?" Despite the fact that she already knew what I believed, she opted to act like Little Miss Know-It-All and tease me. She had previously had the firm believe that I was just trying to get her attention by acting up. This had definitely gotten under my skin. Anyway, Rita started ranting about how Anna and Mary told her about the incident described in another story that I had told her. And she thought it was a big joke that I was seeking attention with my ghost stories. Even before I could answer that, she already knew that I was an empath and that I could communicate with the other side in some extent. Anna and Mary were irritated by the remark. For the sake of her own mental health, Anna simply urged her to stop talking. Contrarily, Mary defended me. She became a believer after I shared another story with her about my encounter with my grandpa. By asking Rita how I could have known things that only she, Anna, and eventually Anna's husband and Mary's husband knew, Kelly, who also has faith in my talents, defended me by pointing out that no one knows everything and never will unless they experience it for themselves. Rita, being the sardonic person that she is, simply grinned and explained that she had Anna reserve a 19th floor room at this hotel in order to gauge my reaction. She apparently didn't believe in my abilities or that ghosts exist because I didn't see any ghosts. To begin with, we were all confused by Rita's words and had to check with her. Apparently, she told us a murder took place on the hotel's 19th floor in the very room we were staying in. It irritated many individuals at the table, including Anna and me. Why? Because Anna was tricked into doing something that could have endangered a friend. For me, this was especially frustrating because I was still learning my craft and how to exert greater control all the time. Still am. This occurrence, I was unable to erect any sort of defense mechanism to protect myself from the overwhelming flood of feelings that I was experiencing in that room and in that hotel. I explained to Rita that my own personal encounters with the supernatural tend to occur in that lineal space between sleep and wakefulness, and that they're almost always accompanied by strong emotional reactions. She found it hilarious and called it foolish. Despite the fact that she drove me absolutely bonkers, I told her that three people had actually died there, one in the hallway and two in the room. Rita, as per usual, was laughing at me. The rest of my friends, notably Anna, found it fascinating and extremely unsettling. A friend of mine wondered whether Rita and I were trying to pull a fast one on them. I still had no idea if Rita was joking or if a murder actually occurred in the hotel. After all, it's not every day that you go looking for information about past murders in a hotel before you book a room. My other buddy, I promised that Rita's information was fresh to me and that I did not know and we were not playing a joke. There was a vibrating from the bedroom door, but I informed my companion that what I felt was simply a feeling because it was stronger in the hall than where I was sitting. Due to the late hour, we headed back to the hotel to freshen ourselves before hitting the clubs. Even though I didn't want to, I had to return to the hotel because I'd left my party outfit and makeup there. And it had been a lot of work to convince my parents to let me stay the night. A mistake I realized the next day. When I returned to the hotel, I experienced the same range of feelings as my initial arrival and departure. The bedroom was where I experienced the greatest surge of feelings within the space itself. Two different people's emotions hit me. A woman's grief and fear, and a man's rage. I didn't feel comfortable in the space, so I dashed to the restroom to get dressed and apply my makeup. Kelly and I both went to the restroom at the same time, and I remember her asking if I was okay. I explained that I had been sensing the dead's feelings in the bedroom and that they included a lot of anger, which made me feel uneasy. She assured me that we were leaving soon and that when we returned, she would be my sleeping companion. It was quite kind of her, and I appreciated it very much. After the event at the hotel, my friends and I went partying and had a lot of fun. We didn't even think about our room for several hours. Over the course of the evening, everyone but Anna, Mary, Kelly, and Rita and I went home. After staying out till about 2:30 in the morning, we called a cab and headed back to the hotel. Being back at the hotel brought back the emotions I had earlier, and Rita's jokes about my situation didn't help matters, although nobody else was laughing. We returned to our hotel room, changed into our pajamas, shared one last nightcap before turning in, knowing well that I would wake up with a hangover the following day. I nevertheless agreed to it since I'd had enough of the feelings these spirits were projecting and just wanted to get some rest and kind of take the edge off. Forget getting adequate shut-eye, I'd rather suffer through my hangover any day. Kelly and I had to sleep on the carpeted floor because there was only enough place for one bed in that bedroom. My roommate Kelly and I went to see if we could borrow some extra bedding for the night. We asked some of the cleaning staff and they directed us to a woman who was a supervisor. The woman was pleasant to us at first, but her demeanor quickly changed when she realized which room we were occupying for the first time. She began to feel uneasy, as if she didn't like the surface beneath her feet. because I was having unsettling dreams and feeling uneasy about being on that floor, we questioned her about what might be wrong. She merely mentioned that the 19th floor made her feel peculiar and wondered why we wanted to pick that room. We pressed her for details and she became frustrated and said she was busy and had to go on about her work duties. Kelly and I retreated to our room to make up our beds. Kelly was on the side of the bed and I was on the other. We were lying in an L configuration, feet touching, parallel to the girl's bed. What happened next is why I brought up our sleeping arrangement. Everyone was so inebriated that they passed out almost immediately. I woke up with a startle, like when you've been underwater for a little longer than you should and you come up for air, but you have no idea what time it was because I couldn't see the alarm clock on the nightstand and my phone was charging in the main dining area. I'd fallen into a deep sleep and was curious about the source of my awakening. I went to the bathroom before going back to sleep since I couldn't make sense of anything and didn't feel like doing any more thinking than I already had. At that point, things began to go wrong. My inability to move resulted in me becoming acutely aware of my physical environment. I couldn't see a thing. And the other girls were asleep, and I felt like something was squeezing my chest from behind. I was terrified and not knowing what was going on. I was afraid of whatever was going on could harm me. Neither my arms nor legs would move. I had no choice to let whatever it was go on by me. By the weight, it felt like it was a man that was squeezing me. Although I knew he was no living man. Not breathing felt like I was going to pass out. And the ringing in my ears made it seem like my brain was exploding. I began to hear what sounded like a lady crying or yelling. I couldn't tell which because I was trying to find a way to breathe. From close by and far away, I couldn't place it with any certainty. I had no idea how long this went on for until Kelly jolted me up suddenly. Without thinking, I sprung up from the floor as if my butt were on fire, and whatever it was screaming, or Kelly that woke me up, woke up Anna, Mary, and Rita. I don't know. For fear of Anna's reaction, I told them I'd had a bad dream and shouted when Kelly woke me up. They resumed their slumber while I got up to use the restroom, accompanied by Kelly, who wanted to make sure I was all right. Everything I ate and drank that evening came back up in the toilet with me. After I dried up and returned to the seating area, Kelly greeted me with a glass of ginger ale, God bless her. When Kelly woke me up, she noticed that I was noticeably paler than she was and asked what had occurred. I walked into my bedroom, shut the door before coming out to fill her in. Finally, I inquired as to Kelly's means of detecting my slumbering presence. She went on to tell me that she too was sensitive, but that hers was far less robust than mine, and that she rarely put it to use because she doubted her ability to manage it. Kelly said that she too thought the environment was strange and uninviting. The setup was nice and everything, but not the atmosphere. Kelly was aware of Anna's feelings on the matter, so she chose to keep quiet. Kelly continued by saying that out of the blue in her sleep, she had a dream in which she was yelling at an elderly woman to get up and help me. Kelly claims that she had a sense of calm from the woman, but after she insisted that she help me, she awoke to find me conscious and breathing heavily, but otherwise still. Kelly also shared that she overheard a woman's sigh of relief when I regained consciousness and was able to move. I asked Kelly to describe the old lady that was in her dream so I could ask her about it. She described an old lady wearing a lime green outfit with a white blouse and having completely white hair down to her waist. Since she so accurately depicted my maternal grandmother, I was both shocked and grateful. She was cremated while wearing that green dress. When I felt the weight of the situation on my shoulders, I couldn't recall a single prayer I had learned as a youngster, so I focused my thoughts on my grandmother instead. Kelly and I had a long conversation about that, preventing us from falling back asleep, but we ended up passing out together on the couch. After being roused from our slumber by Anna and Mary at 9 a.m., we each took a turn in the shower. Kelly and I went first, followed by Rita. Kelly must have told Anna, Mary, and Rita about the incident in the middle of the night while I was in the shower. Both Anna and Mary were surprised to find that they had slept through it all. They were worried about Kelly and me. In contrast, Rita took our actions as payback for her efforts to disprove my claims of innocence. We had breakfast in the hotel's dining room after everyone had showered and dressed. Our table was rather close to the server's counter, so he could hear us as we discussed the events that had taken place above. Kelly noticed this as well, and she summoned him to find out what he was aware of happening in that room. When he heard the room number, he immediately turned pale. Evidently, he had been called to that room for room service a few times since he started several years ago. He had never been comfortable there. We inquired as to whether or not any fatalities had occurred there. He claimed that he wasn't working at the hotel at the time, but that rumors were circulating among the staff and management that many years ago, deaths of three people at the hotel were a result of a murder-suicide in that room. The server at first didn't believe it because he was a new guy and he assumed they were just trying to intimidate him. We were left in a stillness as the server continued on. Mary was the first to speak. She congratulated me on a job well done and inquired after Rita's opinion of my abilities at the time. Nobody laughed, though, except for Rita, who grunted instead. We checked out the hotel and Rita drove herself home while Anna and Mary took Kelly and me to our various addresses. Kelly suggested I have my mom hose me out in the driveway before entering the house because of all the sweat that was on me. Kelly is also from the area where I grew up, but although I practice Hinduism, Kelly is Catholic. To practice many cultures to pray for protection and have water poured over one's head before entering the house if they've encountered a spirit while away from their home. This manner you may use to protect your home from evil spirits without inviting them in. After that, I was still exhausted, so I went to bed early to recover from my hangover. The next morning, following the party, I woke up to find that Kelly had emailed all of my party-going pals detailing the events of the night and the details she had learned about the murder-suicide that had taken place in the hotel. The facts that she found were quite startling. It in fact did confirm that a murder-suicide had taken place in our room. And she also came across many other accounts from people who had stayed in that very room. Accounts very similar to mine. Through all the teasing I had taken from Rita, she still did not respond to the fact that I was sensitive and had gone through that. And the facts did in fact line up with the horror we experienced that night.
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Want a commercial-free experience of the show with access to the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories? Sign up at Apple Podcasts right now and try it for 3 days free. GhostPodcast.com or Patreon.com/RealGhostStories.